Hey, this is Kelly, and you're about to listen to a podcast with Donnie and Sharon Fritz. And if you've seen episode one of The Neighborhood Project, you'll remember them from the very last scene. She is the beautiful wife who says, "You're my choice." And he is the cancer patient who says, "I know that now." They have an astonishing story. He was diagnosed in 2002 with a cancer that required that a lot of his face be removed. And he's been living with a series of masks that include a prosthetic nose and a forehead and a little bit of a upper lip. And he's a huge extrovert and a very funny guy. And maybe the worst part of the whole thing for him was being shunned and being a person who made mothers want to pull their children away or walk across and take the other sidewalk. So they're very special people. They are total role models for how to live a life of meaning and purpose. So Donnie and Sharon, we came to know you through Acceptance, which is this film that kind of spilled out of a guy named Mick Davey, who's so special. Tell us how you came to know us. What did Mick say when he called you, and how did he find you?
Mick had done a documentary for a news station in Australia, and he called us and talked to us. He became a real close friend to us, and he asked me if we'd do the show, and I always told him if I could help one person along the way, fight through whatever they're going through, that sure, I'd do it.
And tell us your story. So how long ago were you diagnosed, and what has the road been?
Donnie was actually diagnosed on December the 23rd in 2002. You want to take it from there?
The road was really rough. I mean, I remember the first time sitting in the doctor's office, and he said, we're going to remove your nose, your forehead, your top lip, your upper palate, and possibly an eye. And then...
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, it was terrifying, but I remember gripping the chair, Sharon said. She could see the veins of my arms stick out. But I was kind of in denial. I thought, somebody's made a mistake. I don't have cancer. It's got to be something else besides cancer. So, after surgery, I remember being rolled into a hallway, and they was getting ready to take me into surgery. And they had administrated something into my IV to relax me, which I was pretty relaxed. I felt like I was going to make it through it. And the doctor comes up to me and he said, "Donnie, I have bad news." I said, "You're taking all that. How much worse can it get?" He said, "Donnie, I have to remove both of your eyes today." And I said, "Doc, you're not taking my eyes today." I said, "That ain't living. I want to live, but I want my eyes." And he said, "Donnie, to get all the cancer, I have to take your eyes. You said you want to live." I said, "I do." My adrenaline went up, and I said, get Sharon in here. I need to see my wife, and I need to see her now." And I remember looking up and seeing her coming down the hallway, and she was just bawling, and I knew they had told her that they was going to take my eyes. And I said, "Sharon, do you believe this? I can't imagine living without sight. I love the beauty of this world, and..." And they said I gripped her hair, and they said I screamed out, "I want to live," and then I passed out. And they actually had to pry my hand out of her hair. And but I remember waking up in ICU, and I had a patch over my left eye, and I thought, well, they took my left eye. I could not speak because I had no palate, but I began to thank the Lord that I still had my right eye. And about that time, Sharon walks into the room, and she looks at me, and she said, "You look good." And I pointed to my left eye, and I shook my head, "No, And she said, honey, you still have your left eye. She said, it's just swelled shut from surgery. Well, actually, both hands went up in the air, and I began to thank the Lord that, you know, that my eyes was spared. And the doctor told me, he said, I came within millimeters, Donnie, had taken both of your eyes. He said, you're a very fortunate, very lucky man.
Wow. When he first told you what they were going to have to take, did he connect you to anybody who had ever had a surgery that massive? Like, did you have a way to think about it
no,
or imagine
he said,
what you might look like or somebody to talk to who had already been there?
I couldn't get my mind off of it, actually. I was having nightmares at night. I would wake up in the middle of the night and I would actually hit myself in the nose, reaching, scared to death to see if the surgery had been done and I lost my nose. I was terrified. I couldn't get it off my mind. And I asked him, could I speak to somebody that lost their nose? And I talked to this guy, and he had lost his nose, but he has mine. They took way back in there, my nose, and his was actually just taken straight off. So it was completely different what he went through than I went through. I lost so much more than he did, but he said it was hard living without a nose, and he had a prosthetic nose that he could put on, but he said he really didn't wear it while he was working. He wore a mask. So before I got my nose, I began to wear a white mask like a doctor wore it, and I would cut it to fit my face.
Sharon, where was your head and heart through this first 6 months from the day that the doctor said this is what the surgery is going to include until you started to adjust? Like, how long did it take you to acclimate?
It was very difficult because I didn't know anyone that went through what we're going through. So I felt very alone. And then the doctor told me to be upbeat, and he said, always have a smile, be caring, be positive. Show him much positivity. Don't let anyone call him. So it took me till the day of his surgery to acclimate to the situation because I was putting on a false face. I had to be perky and mm-hmm. smile, and you're going to make it through this. And I believed that, and I was hopeful that he would, but I watched him deteriorate day by day. I mean, his eyes were sunken. He got real black around his eyes, black circles, and until it just completely covered the whole top of his face. I watched him pulling the flesh and the chewed bone out of his nose, and we'd put it in formaldehyde for Emory University to study. And so I never really got a chance to get used to the fact that everything was going to be so different because I was having to be fake and false. And I did have hope, but I didn't have it as strong as maybe I should have. And then the day they brought him in to the recovery room, I actually fell to the floor. I couldn't stand because it was right there now. Now it really, really happened. And so I may not have done as well as some other people have done, but I did my best. I did the best I could do for me.
You did a great job, honey.
Thank you.
Hey, Donnie.
Oh, she did. Go ahead.
Hey, Donnie, what...
Hey, Tom.
What kind of guy are you? Like, who are you when this all comes smashing into your life? I mean, are you
Actually,
what did you do for a job, and how would you describe yourself?
I did physical hard work about all my life. I grew up in Virginia, and there wasn't a lot of jobs down there. I worked in the log woods cutting trees. I worked for farmers in tobacco. And then when I moved to... Ohio, I started a business of my own, a woodworking business, and I did shows all over the United States and sold to people even overseas. I really loved wood, and I was a good-hearted person. I could, it was like when I was young, I could see somebody have a scar, and it was like I could feel their pain, and I would listen to their stories of what they went through, you know, and it kind of made me think, wow, what did people go through when they went through the Oregon Trail having babies there, you know, with not a doctor around or something? I thought, these people are tough. I want to be like them. Tough, but have
wow.
a good heart.
So you're like a huge, you're a feeler.
Oh, yeah, I really was. Actually, I was embarrassed of it through school. I thought I was different than a lot of people. I didn't like bullies that picked on people, and I'd walk up to guys that was twice my size, and I'd go, leave them alone. You know, I felt for people. I really cared for people. You know, I haven't been a perfect person in my life, but I always had that caring for people. I'm a people person. Sharon will tell you, I'll go to a flea market or something, and I never meet a stranger. I'll talk to anybody at any time about any subject, really. I just love people.
But now, during the first 6 months of your surgery and first couple of years after that, he became a recluse. He was embarrassed of how he looked, and when he would go out, there were times people made fun of him, and so he would just, he got to where it was almost like he was in jail at all times. He wouldn't go out the door unless it was dark, and that was very hard to watch him, because he's Mr. Personality, and he only had me to talk to, because he was very reclusive for a long time.
Yeah, Kelly, my life felt like it was turned upside down, you know. I mean, I was wearing this mask, and I am a good-hearted person. And when you walk by a father and a mother, and they got their children, and then they see you wearing a mask like that, and they see how the rest of your face look, and they're pulling their kids away from you, it hurts your heart. And I remember walking in a store in Calhoun and walking by this couple. And it was around September, and I remember I went to the aisle over, and I heard the guy tell the woman he was with, he said, did you see that freak? It ain't even Halloween yet. And he about scared me to death. So it hurt my heart. I went home, and actually, Sharon goes, what happened? I said, nothing, I'm all right. She said, no, I can tell something happened. I said, I'm not going out in public no more. I said, I'm scaring people. It hurts me. I said, I'm a monster, I guess. People looking at me like I'm a monster. I said, I can't take it. I'm not going. And Sharon's right. I did become a recluse for a while, stand in the house. I would hear people laughing and playing outside, and I'd peek out the window, and I just wanted to be out there, you know, enjoying life again. And I felt like I couldn't anymore. I didn't know how to fight through it, it seemed like. I wanted to nose. I wanted to feel like a regular person. I wanted my friends to accept me. Sharon, my grandkids, my kids, I wanted everybody just to accept me. I wanted them to see Donnie and not look at the face, but to see the inside. Mm-hmm. Of me, what comes out.
When you're transitioning...
You know what's so interesting? Oh.
Sorry. When you're transitioning through this, Donnie, and so you're... And I'm trying to imagine you in that house.
Right.
Are you in pain? Are you sleeping? Like, what's happening as you're going through this?
I'm in a lot of pain. I'm in physical pain, mental pain. I was emotional. I was having panic attacks. I feel like I'd lose my breath at times and couldn't breathe. Sharon turned a fan on right in front of me, and I'd still say I can't breathe. I was having nightmares, like I said. I wasn't sleeping right. We'd say our prayers before we go to bed, and I'd be watching Sharon fall asleep, and I'd be just up thinking about my life, how much it's changed. It was hellish to me. It was just hellish. it was like I was in a trapped in a nightmare, worst nightmare I ever had in my life, and I couldn't get out. I was so hurt, didn't know what to do about it, couldn't figure things out, worried, scared. It was so many emotions. I was hurt spiritually, physically, mentally, hurt in every which way you can think of.
He would sleep a lot, and then on top of sleeping, when he would get up, he didn't want to talk. He would be in a corner, and it was like he distanced himself, not just from the world, but even from himself. For a while, I kept the mirrors covered up. I took mirrors off the wall, and no pictures. He didn't want to be seen by even himself, and that was sad. Really sad and hard to know how to go through that. And we did try to find someone that had been through something similar. At the time, we could not find anyone, but since then, we've become mentors to people who go through facial cancer. And that's fulfilling to us, to be there for someone, because there was no one there for us at that time.
Yeah, I was a man of faith, and I felt like I lost my faith through this. And finally, I started just praying and asking God, you know, to bring me out of this dark hole I felt like I was in, to get back to enjoy life and have some joy in my life, and just come to accept what I've been through and just keep on going on and being Donnie again. I knew I needed to get back there. I just didn't know how to do it. I didn't want to go see a psychiatrist or nothing like that. I really didn't want to go anywhere. It was very hard. Depression.
And you're so outgoing. I mean, that's what people who see acceptance through their neighborhood projects would never guess. You're like a fabulous ham on stage. Like, I loved being with you on stage, both of you. You're incredible. Like, you bounced. Well, you're all the way back, as far as I can tell.
You know, I've even said to myself, I'm like a super ball. I might hit the ground, but I'm going to bounce back up. Sharon once said, let's go shopping at Walmart. And I said, you'll be able to do the shopping, but I won't. And she goes, why is that? And I said, you'll see. Well, we get to Walmart, and I've been in the paper and was on radio and gave my testimony about how I made it through cancer. So a lot of people knew me. So there was like 20 people around me. I couldn't do anything. People was sticking money in my pocket. People was asking me to pray for their uncle that had cancer. People that had depression was asking me to pray for them. Like I said, Sharon went shopping that day, and I stood there talking about 20 to 25 people, telling them to never give up, never give in, fight with everything that's in you. And sometimes you don't know what's in you. The strength will come out that you think, I never had that strength before that I ever knew of. But it'll come out in you. You'll make it. Don't give up.
But now he still has depressing times. And his lows are so low that it's scary at times, because he feels useless and worthless, and he cannot work because they've recently diagnosed him with facial neuropathy. And there are times he's sitting in the chair or walking through the house, and when the neuropathy strikes, it looks like someone is slapping him. An invisible person is just beating him in the face. His head will rock from side to side, and he grabs his head in horrible pain. And so during those times, he will go to bed, and he'll stay in bed sometimes 24 hours. Just recently, he was in bed for 3 days. And it's scary when that happens. The doctor does not know what to tell us to do, except to just get through it, and eventually he does.
How long has it been?
15 years. I remember about a month ago, I stood up in church and told everybody, I thanked them for their prayers and stuff, that it had been 15 years. that my doctor had told me. He said, Donnie, you're the longest living survivor of this type of cancer, and you made it, buddy. So I got up in church and told him what my wow. doctor said. I said, you know, I'm in this story, but this story really isn't about me. It's about how I feel like how God has helped me through this, how my wife Sharon has helped me through this. She's a very strong woman. I believe God put her in my life that he knew one day that I would need a strong woman. It's something to be in so much pain, and you're laying there and you don't know what to do, and then she begins to pray over you. And I've actually, you could sit your watch, within 10 or 15 minutes, the pain would start to recede. And sometimes I'd go to sleep, wake up, and she'd still be praying over me. Sharon's a very caring person, a very giving person. I remember telling her before, Sharon, why don't you go get a life? Because, you know, I love to work, and then not being able to work, and I got one eye lower than the other, so I'm not cross-eyed. They call me cockeyed, so I have depth perception trouble, like walking. I can't tell if the floor is deep. Sometimes I'll be high-stepping it. It's difficult. Like Sharon says, I have bad days, but when I have a good day, boy, it's a good day. I'm out with people, telling them, talking to them, going to different places, sharing my testimony. People look at me and say, you know, you inspired me. I had a couple of pimples on my face, this guy told me, and he said, I didn't want to go out in public, so I put a Band-Aid on it, and I thought I looked silly. He said, I looked in the mirror, and he said, Donnie, I've seen your face in the mirror. And I said, Donnie Fritz can walk around town with not a nose or not even a mask on, and surely I can walk around with this Band-Aid on.
Wow. Have you guys, let me ask a couple questions. One, how long have you had this spiritual relationship? You talk a lot about God and church. Is this a lifelong thing? Is this something that came along with your life challenge? And then tell us how you met.
For me, it's been a lifelong thing. I was born into a family of believers. My mamma died at 97, and she was a Christian since she was 15. And she instilled the faith in her children, my dad, and my mom was raised in church, and that we actually lived in a church house growing up. And I found that, I thought we had the biggest house on the street. I thought we were the coolest people, and I found out later religion wasn't looked on like we looked on it. So for me, it was lifelong. And we actually met, I can't remember when we met. I know it was a McDonald's, and he was really the nicest looking man I had ever seen. And I'm shy with certain situations, and I just stuck my finger out and said, come here with my finger, and he shook his head no, and I was deflated until he came back out. And then he came over to the car, and it started a friendship, and then later on, years later, it became a relationship. And I'm thankful for
him. So you fell in love with him for his looks.
Yes, I did.
Well, then she seen, after that, what kind of heart I had. And Sharon was a very shy person, being a preacher's kid. Now, I went to church when I was little and stuff, but my dad didn't go to church, or neither did my mom. But all of us kids went when we was young and stuff, but I never really gave my heart to the Lord until probably about 3 years before cancer hit me. And but I remember the day I was walking across that parking lot. You know, I think we was in our 20s, 21, 22 when we met. But here I'm strutting across the parking lot, and you know that show John Travolta did, Stand Alive? I had the Bee Gees in my head. You can tell by the way I use my walk, I'm a woman's man, no time to talk. And then all of a sudden you see that arm and that finger saying, come here. And I was like shaking my head, no, you don't want me, you know. And then it did it again, and I went to McDonald's and came back out. And I remember seeing the arm do it and the finger come here again. So I thought, what the heck, I might as well go over and talk to her. She'll see I'm not what she wants. Well, when I remember walking up that window, because I couldn't see her really good, and I remember walking up that window, and I was like, oh, wow, why did I shake my head no? This woman is gorgeous. So we sit there, and we was...
She is.
Yeah,
she...
Oh, she's beautiful. And a beautiful inside, too. Because as we talked, I could see... I feel that inside of her, that she was a very good person, and being a preacher's kid, she was very nice. She didn't use no foul language, very polite and stuff, and it was beautiful, you know. And I always tease her. I said, you went to McDonald's that day for a hamburger, and you got yourself a Big Mac, honey.
You are unbelievable. That is such a good line. Do you think your highs are higher than the average person because you've had such hard lows?
I think so. I watch him when on his good days, like he alluded to just a moment ago, he has no off button on good days. There is no turning him off. He starts from the minute he wakes up until he goes to bed, which is usually as many hours into the next day as it can be. His good days are amazing good days.
When you feel like you had a second chance at life, it's like your life changes. I go through a drive-thru and never pay attention to the person that was handing me the food or the person that took my money or anything. And then I started just looking more at people. And, you know, sometimes you could see somebody having a hard day at work and tell them, hey, you got beautiful hair. You see them light up and then go, wow, where did that smile come from? You know, Sharon kind of taught me that, just saying a few little words to somebody to make their day. And, that's what I look for. I tell God, I said, if you crack that door, I'll jump in and tell them all about you and what you did in my life and how I survived this cancer with your strength, with my wife's strength. And I just love having fun with people. If they have a dog, I'll get talking to their dog and stuff. I act a fool. I have people laughing and stuff. I just enjoy that. And every day when I have a good day, it's just like I want to live it to the fullest and bless anybody that comes my way.
How do you think about acceptance? Like, what was that process like for you? Like, and does it continue? Like, if you do have bad days still, of course, as everyone does and as you would, do you have to, like, loop through the acceptance process all over again?
Yes. Every day he has to face. This morning when he woke up, I heard him in the restroom, and this is an everyday thing. He, without a nose and with his sinus walls being cut out, and a lot of them have crushed, everything that, I don't know how to say it without being graphic, but I'll just be graphic, but everything drains into his throat, and he coughs and he hacks. The bedroom walls have to be scrubbed because when he coughs, there are times things just come out of his body. He can't help it. I have to hear him go through this every day, and he has to live with this every single day. Every morning that he wakes up, he doesn't wake up like I do and just get up and I'm happy and perky. He has to go through so much pain to start the day. And then that area has to be cleaned out 2 and 3 more times a day takes 45 minutes to over an hour, and the pain and the blood and the moaning, and I'm sitting in the living room or doing something else in the house, I cry. My heart breaks for him to know that he still, every day, has to learn to accept this and to know that when he's 70 and 80 and however much time God gives him, he's going to have to go through this. And that's just at the beginning of the day. That has nothing to do with all the other challenges that we as humans face normally, a normal circumstances. So he has to live with acceptance minute by minute, more so even than I have to. But as his helpmate or his wife or his sidekick, we are supposed to help. We have a tendency to want to help someone. And in this one, I can't do anything. There's nothing I can do to make this situation better. And so to hear him suffer like this is, this morning I just cried and sat in that chair. I sat down and I just cried thinking, this is forever. This is forever and ever and ever, as long as he has breath. And my heart broke for him in there, and I asked God to give him peace and to heal him quickly. And at first, it didn't happen. He was grouchy, and he was upset. He was in pain. And he went outside, and he looks at the trees and takes a lot of pictures of the sky. And he came back in a much better mood and able to handle the day. But it's always going to be hard, I think. And to accept the fact that you're different. Grandkids are in visiting, and he has to put his nose on, he thinks, real fast. He wants them to accept him just as he is, but then he puts on the mask because he doesn't want to offend, even though they wouldn't be. And it's something I don't think of. I say, let's take a picture, and he has to run and put on the mask. So it's different. Life is hard.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I put on the mask because I know they're going to show their friends their picture, and I want to look good in the picture with them because they look so good. But acceptance, when I did that show, there's a lot of things I had to accept in my life. Like Sharon said, maintaining this nose takes a lot of time out of the day. And imagine a big hole that goes way back in there about 7 inches or more, and you have no sinus walls. And you imagine putting glue all in there and letting it dry at night. And then you have to peel that off every day of your life. And it hits every nerve ending in there, and it'll start bleeding, and you got blood drainage, and then the other stuff that goes with it, and it's very hard. It's painful. I walk outside, and then I try to get my mind off of it. I'll look up at the sky, and I go, it's a beautiful day. Even if it's raining, it's a beautiful day to me. And I start looking around, thinking, all right, it's going to settle down here in a little bit. The nerve endings will start feeling better, and I'll start feeling better. But I remember when Michael called about the show, I thought, you know, if I hadn't accepted all these things that went with this surgery, one day I would have to accept that I didn't do nothing about it, that I just stayed a recluse in the house and hid behind four walls and not associate with people, and became a person that I'm not. I had to bring Donnie back out. And Donnie has bad days, but Donnie has more good days than bad. And I take every minute of a good day and try to make it the best day ever. But when Michael called me to do that show, I thought about it. And all the different things I had to accept. And like Sharon says, every day I still have to accept it's going to go over and over. Kind of reminds me of that movie Groundhog Day, where the guy fell asleep and he wakes up, and every day's the same day. But with me, it's not. Mm-hmm. I can make it better with my attitude. With the help of my wife, she's very encouraging. Her strength, I remember one day I said, I am so tired of taking care of this nose and everything that goes with it, Sharon. I said, I wish I would be walking across the street and a truck driver would hit me. And she said, Donnie. And I said, what? And she said, how do you think that truck driver would feel the rest of his life knowing that he killed a man? And it made me think, you know, about him and what he would have to go through to accept. So I thought, I got to get out of this. I got to get back to being Don again and not being a baby. I never did want anybody to feel sorry for me. That's one thing I never did like. I said, don't feel sorry for me. Feel me, but don't feel sorry for me.
Donnie, do you think, or for either one of you guys, I mean, Sharon, you were talking about some of Donnie's down days. Do you think your down days are necessary in a way? In other words, do you need that break perhaps and that place to go as a way to kind of gather strength and I don't know, motivation to go back to that better place? Or do you think it's realistic? And I mean realistic. Obviously, it would be, none of us want to have down days. But is it unrealistic to think that way? And maybe even a little bit too much to ask?
Oh, I don't even know how to even answer that question.
I think you do need the break. Because when I said it goes, his on days go sometimes into the next day. He can be up for a couple days nonstop going, finding something to do. And he's on, it's like he's on alert to be, find someone to be a blessing to and someone to help and make someone smile, intentionally go out to make someone feel better. And he gets it, he does so much with that, that I think he wears his mind out as well as his body. And then he goes to sleep, but I also think he needs to recharge because realistically, life is hard. And he can be real optimistic on some days, and then the very next day, it's almost like he's a totally different person because he feels worthless and useless and helpless and whatever else he can come up with. Even this morning, he was like that for a little while. But if he doesn't rein it in, the depression will overtake him again. And then it takes a lot longer for him to come out. So I think realistically, you need the downtime, don't you? Some of the time.
Yeah, I do. To recharge, like you said. Because a couple of years ago, I went through a very bad depression.
For two long years.
I just wanted to die. I was ready to hang it up. I said, you know, I've had... This a couple of years ago, I thought, well, I've had 13 years of God giving me a second chance on life. That's enough. I said, Lord, you can just take me on home. I'm ready to go. You know, I've seen my kids grow up, seen the grandkids grow up. Sharon, knowing her, I know she'd make it. I feel sorry for Sharon. There's days I feel sorry for her. I look at her and I think, all she does to do for me, to keep me going and to be positive. And there's days I feel sorry for her. I mean, when we got married, she was making good money, I was making good money. We'd go out of town probably every other 2 weeks and go stay at a different town just to enjoy the place. And we haven't been on a vacation in I don't know how many years.
Until we went to Greenwich.
Yeah, when we went up there, that was like a vacation house. We stayed at that hotel y'all put us up, the Hotel Hyatt. I mean, it was beautiful. It was gorgeous. We walked around. We enjoyed ourselves. We went to the mall. We walked around and we was watching people. And you see their lives and... And like I said, if I know I could just touch one person to keep on going, then I feel like I've done something, I've accomplished something that day, you know, in my life. Because when you don't work being a man, you want to be the, you want to be the breadwinner and bring home the bread. And I don't like drawing a check for disability. I don't like taking pills for pain. I don't like cleaning out my nose. But all of that comes with what I went through. I wanted to live, and I'm living, and I got to do the best I can. I have bad days, but I'm not going to quit. I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to give in. I want to keep on going. And I worry about the future sometimes. I think, wow, depth perception cleaning this out. Sometimes I can't even hardly see how deep I'm going to clean it out. And I think, well, what am I going to do if I live another 10 more years? And I've gotten a lesion on my eyes. They've taken so much muscle around both of my eyes that when I sleep, they won't close. So my eyes are getting really bad because I'll be sound asleep and my eyes will be wide open because I don't have enough muscle to close them. Wow. So it's very hard, but I can do this. I've done it for 15 years and I'm not going to quit yet. And I got backup here, my wife Sharon, and my Savior, Jesus Christ.
It's such a gift how honest you are about how hard it is and sharing these details and helping other people really internalize your experience and your incredible achievement of getting through every day and keeping your whole life is like centered on the one hand, just getting by, and then the other hand, this big, beautiful love that you have with your wife and your faith, and it's really a gift, your honesty, both of you.
Oh.
Thank you.
Thank you. You know, Sharon was telling me, we talked to other cancer victims that may be losing their nose or something. Some has faith, some don't. If they don't mention it, I don't mention it. But if they ask me, I'll tell them that, you know, I have faith in the Lord. And they'll want to know, and I'll go, do you want to know the truth? Do you want a good version of it, or do you want the whole truth? And I'll ask them, how are they losing their nose, too? Because that's a big difference, just to have your nose taken off. My doctor said he could take a couple of years and actually build me a nose out of my own body, other body parts, out of my ears and stuff, and actually make me a nose, you know?
If you had lost it the
right
one way.
If it would just been cut straight off, like in a car wreck or something like that. So I talk to these people and try to encourage them, but I also want to tell them the truth. I don't want them later go, wow, that man lied to me about it. It's harder than what he said. So I try to be honest with them and tell them the truth, what they're going to face in their life. And I said, you know, I don't know you, but I'll be praying for you that you're going to make it. Because if I can do it, you can do it too.
I'm so glad I know you.
I'm glad I know you.
Yeah, all y'all. We had such a wonderful time up here. So many people come up to us after the show. I remember one woman said, I want to be a better wife to my husband because of you. And I was shocked. And I never did like my voice. I never did think my voice went back to what it was before cancer, but one woman walked up and she said, I love the way your voice sounds, and I love the way you talk. And then another person come up and said, I watched you for the first time. I was so high. I was the highest I ever been, and me and Sharon's got a stunned look on our face, and he goes, I was on white jet blue. And he said, I watched a television show, and he said, you all have inspired me. So many people was hugging us, kissing me on the cheek, telling me that they inspired them today to go out tomorrow to be a better person, to encourage somebody to keep on fighting, to compliment somebody when you see it, to brag on somebody instead of put them down, to talk good about them instead of talking bad. And to hear people talk like that about you, you think, wow, I'm doing something. I might not be doing what I want to do, woodworking and all that, but I'm doing something to help this world. This world is in an awful mess, and we need to come together. It shouldn't be about the color of our skin. I remember just singing a little song when I was a little boy in church. Red and yellow, black and white, we are precious in His sight. God loves the little children of the world, and we need to come together and start loving each other. You know, the Bible says, love your neighbor as you love yourself. And I use the Bible. The Bible says, there's a verse in there, I can do all things through Christ that strengthens me. And them verses means a lot to me. He says, we're more than a conqueror. You know, just being a conqueror would be good enough for me. But He says, we're more than a conqueror. So, Bible verses, God, Jesus, my wife, it gives you strength to keep on going on, keep on fighting, to want to be a better person than you was the day before.
You know, Donnie, a lot of those people you're talking about, so we do this a lot. You know, we do a lot of shows, a lot of live shows in different places around the country. But rarely do we see moments like that moment, you know, and you think about, you know, time spent and then good delivered. You both of you guys like so efficiently give these gifts to people. You were there that night to witness it, you know, so I'm glad to hear you saying this. I'm glad to hear you describing some of the things people said to you, the feedback that you got. But we do it a lot. And we see it a lot, you know, even when you guys aren't there. People talking about your story through that film.
Right.
It's pretty magical. And I think the way that you, you know, there's words you choose, which really means there's a philosophy you're following that sort of powerfully and quickly delivers something to people that not many people can deliver, you know? And I think, you know, you just touched on it, but it's a gift. You know, that's you're doing things for people. Sometimes right in front of your face, sometimes in a room, you know, through the Neighborhood Project that you might not have even heard about, sometimes in a plane at 35,000 feet.
Right.
So I want you to know that. And I also just want to thank both of you for doing that. But I think it's important that you know it too. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Tom, and thank you, Kelly. You all, we've read more about the Neighborhood Project and the Nantucket Project because of the internet and because of meeting you all. And this is a life-changing thing that you all are doing.
Yeah, it touched us and blessed us to know what you guys are all about, you know. It was wonderful being up there and then sharing every day. She'd be checking up on you guys, reading something about you, telling me, and I was like, wow, they're trying to change the world. What good is that? Wow, that is wonderful. That's great. What wonderful people you guys are, you know. You all touch us and bless us, inviting us there, and the way you treated us and stuff, seeing them get up on the stage and ask the questions, and I remember the black guy, the opera singer. I mean, what a blessing that was, you know. I mean, the whole thing, you know, that you're all about touches a lot of people. And I believe it's going to go touch a lot more.
I do too.
But thank you all for what you did. Kelly and Tom, you all are just incredible people yourself.
Well, we appreciate
the
time.
Best job ever.
Yeah, there you go.
It has to be. To be able to help people
right?
The way you do. Wow.
Well,
it's just sharing great stories. It's like sharing the spirit of people like you. It's like this incredible reset. And then to put it in living rooms where people can talk for 2 hours. I mean, nobody talks for 2 hours anymore.
No.
You know?
That's true.
Like just to have an unabridged conversation is such a thrill. And then to have that conversation kind of oriented toward something greater, oriented toward meaning.
Exactly.
It's very simple and very profound.
It is. And when we were watching the video, as you all had it played while we were there, Donnie looked over and he said, it's almost like we're not those people that were watching on the video. It was like we were watching it about someone else, and it made us cry. We were crying, and it was
I have the exact same feeling.
Isn't that crazy? I love it.
Yeah,
I like the little cartoon characters of the. I was like, look at that. That thing is so cute.
I liked it, too.
Look at that couple at the end. They're so sweet.
Right. Yeah.
That's funny.
Hey, so we really want you guys to come be with us in Nantucket this fall. So will you come? Can we fly
you
to Nantucket in September and have you come
be
on stage with us?
Oh, we would love that.
Oh, yeah. We'll be there. Anytime you guys need us for anything, let us know. If there's anything we can do to help, we'll do our best to help.
Well, this would be super powerful. You're just going to meet so many interesting people, and they're going to get a chance to meet you. And it's the blend of all these ideas that makes that whole 4 days so magical. So you'll love it, and people will love getting to know you.
To be partnered with you in any way is such an honor for anyone. I mean, when we were talking to Chris, we were talking about the magnitude of emotion. Oh, my goodness. And to meet each other and to hear each other's stories, it was life-changing. It truly was. It was just wonderful.
Right.
Well, thank you.
Well, now we've got a date.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a date.
September 13th, I'll see you in Nantucket.
Interview. I thought, wow, it looks like he had been doing it for years.
Yeah.
I know. Wasn't he amazing, Chris Schumacher?
Really was.
Amazing guy.
He's incredible. He's like you. I mean, that's why it's the best job ever, is to find you and find Chris Schumacher and find the next 10, Gordon Gund. Like, there's just people in the world that we must elevate their voices. We must put them in front of more people. It's good for everybody.
You know, we watch the news and we see all the bad things that happen. And we did a show with a TV show in Atlanta, 11 Alive, and they said they had so many people call in that day that wanted to talk to us and stuff. We actually was on a live chat talking back to people after the show, and they said that was one of the best shows they had that uplifted people. People started hearing all the bad stuff. They want to see some good stuff that's happening in the world. Y'all do that.
We appreciate you very much.
Well, it's cool. Mutual. All right, we'll let you guys go. Thank you so much. And
thanks, guys.
We have a lot more road ahead of us together.
That's awesome. Thank you, Kelly.
Yeah,
talk to you soon, guys.
Chris hugged me and he said, "I think we'll cross paths again." I said, "I believe we will." But thank you so much, Kelly, and thank you, Tom. You're all wonderful people, and what you're doing is incredible. It's great. Thank you so much for having us.
So long, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye. Bye, Tom.
Bye bye. This podcast and the Neighborhood Project are powered by the Nantucket Project.